Don't you see? He's got us now. Okay, this is exactly what he wants. We can't go to the police. Not now. He's made sure of that. He's just out there, and he's watching us and waiting. What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
Sights to show you.
You know, I feel like we were different people the last time we recorded.
We were. It's so sad, and it's so true. We were.
We were, like, way different. Like, what the hell? What?
I was in, like, such a better place last time we were recording.
Not only that, it's just, it's like, remember last summer when we took that break and we were like, oh, life's just catching up now to fuck us up because we spent so much time not even paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it just is like, how about a couple weeks earlier?
Last year, before our break, oh, wow. Whew.
Would you remember, it was last summer.
Exactly. Like, I know what I did last summer. And with that,
is that time now?
Yes. Let's go ahead and get started. That was a very funny segue.
That was organic. I was like, wait a second.
I thought that's where you were going.
No, I was just thinking, just accelerated bullshit. But you know, hey, what a way to tie it in.
I know. Like, last summer. This summer. Just this past, like, last episode to this episode. Like,
yeah.
It comes in waves, my friend.
We got Ben Willis for sure.
Yeah. So, welcome back to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and with me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on, like, three nuggets and a claw, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm on the other seven, and
some fries. We split a $5 Wendy's meal, which I was astonished by how much food they gave us. Like, I blew my goddamn mind.
He was just like, can you please help me eat this? And yeah. I was just like, yes, I haven't eaten today. It's been a weird week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you everyone for bearing with us for skipping last week. Anthony was far more gracious than he needed to be. I'll just throw myself under the bus. I was possibly exposed to COVID, so we were playing it safe until I got a fucking Q-tip shoved up my nose mm-hmm. to say that I wasn't. So.
Yep, okay, she's good.
She's good. It's the worst, but you know, it was my civic duty to make sure that I didn't get anyone else sick because mm-hmm. we're in a fucking pandemic. Wear a mask, people.
Jesus, the amount of, I feel like the videos I'm seeing online are getting more frequent and worse.
The amount of people I'm seeing who are going to, like, parties.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, I'm like,
specifically, like, hey, let's get infected parties.
Oh, I haven't seen that, but
COVID parties, yeah.
Oh.
That's a thing.
Oh.
Yeah. People stand, like, really close to each other. They don't wear any fucking mask. It's just gross.
I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, wear a mask.
Of course the cat.
It's always something. Can you please? Come on. Thank you. Obnoxious. Anyway, yeah, so speaking of last summer and the differences a year makes, we are talking about a kind of classic. I don't know if I can really call it.
In my eyes, it's a classic.
I
grew up in the era, so.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about I Know What You Did Last Summer, of course, from 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a.
Classic doesn't have to be a masterpiece.
What a 90s, like.
Time capsule?
Time capsule.
It's a time capsule, like a motherfucker.
For sure. So let's just jump right into it, shall we?
Yes, go for it. What does IMDb tell us about this movie?
Yes. Four young friends bound by a tragic accident are reunited when they find themselves being stalked by a hook-wielding maniac in their small seaside town.
Damn.
I mean, yeah, that's the movie.
That is the movie. That's actually the whole movie.
It's literally the whole movie.
There's like exposition, but it's just like...
There's
red herrings. It's all for red herrings.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It was written, of course, by...
The one and only.
By the one and only screenwriter, Kevin Williamson, and directed by Jim Gillespie.
I haven't really heard much about him.
I actually know nothing.
I should have probably put his career in here, but eh.
Way to go.
Whatever, Jim. You know, you made a good movie.
You know what? Let's ignore the director and just go straight to the cast because they are really the
selling point.
The selling point of this movie. This movie is starring Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillippe, which really could have just been replaced by Matthew Lillard, in my opinion.
Oh, no. Ooh, I don't know about that.
That's
tough. That's a different kind of energy going. No, maybe. You're right. Hold on. Now I think about it. The beginning with Matthew Lillard. Yeah, that's true. That could have worked. Little rich boy. Okay. I can dig it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And, of course, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, my other boy. this cast is awesome. It was just four people. Everybody else is whatever, but yeah, like these four.
This is all you need for the cast. Like mm-mm. Everyone else is just completely inconsequential, right?
Can't hardly wait. Buffy, Ryan Phillippe, and she's all that. That's all, right there.
Yeah, and of course,
Well, Cruel Intentions, but that's also Sarah Michelle Gellar, and that movie's kind of whack.
Oh man. Good times. Okay, so box office for this movie. It had a $17 million budget, and it was released on October 17th, 1997.
That's a lot of sevens. Jesus. Ooh. I know. They're like, good luck, please. It was good luck,
actually. And it was good luck because it made $125 million.
Yep. That's huge.
Yeah.
Especially for
horror. In the late 90s?
Look, think how much money horror movies make now. They don't crack 100
million. I'm honestly shocked that this made that much money.
That's 90s money, too. So inflation-wise, it's even more. I don't know what the actual difference is, but like it's... We should start putting that in there. Just to see.
I'll look while you go into
history. The origins here, because of course I Know What You Did Last Summer didn't just come out of the brain of Kevin Williamson. There was an influence there. A book, actually. So, in 1973, pioneering young adult fiction writer Lois Duncan released a short... Lois Duncan. She released a short suspense novel about a group of friends who run over a young boy and make a pact never to tell anyone about what they had just done. And in the novel, the group of friends begin receiving notes saying, "I know what you did last summer." And the quest to find out who wrote the note goes on for about 200 pages. So that's...
Somehow, that is a better story than this movie was. Also, it's 200,776,479.
That's huge. Yeah. That's fucking huge. Jesus. That's more than fucking Halloween, whatever it was, made also.
Oh, for sure.
Damn.
But, yeah. Go. That is quite the... I mean, it's pretty much, another 75...
Damn.
Yeah, $1 million.
What's happening to our money?
I'm not going to get into it. Yeah. I read a thing, and I'll tell you about it later, but I'm incensed.
That's enough doom and gloom for one fucking week. But Duncan wrote the novel after hearing stories from her daughter about her high school drama. And seeing a story about a hit and run, she just kind of went with it. So this was a pretty big leap for her because her previous novel was Hotel for Dogs. But she took this theme of young adult horror suspense novels and made a career of it, actually, throughout the 80s. So she was the original, YA fucking horror girl. However, unfortunately, in 1989, her youngest daughter, Arquette, would be murdered by a still-unknown gunman in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
One, Arquette is a great name.
I thought so too, yeah.
Two, that's really sad.
I mean, it's New Mexico. It's the Wild West.
And then I was going to say three, it's New Mexico. Yeah. So I feel really bad that I'm just like, it's New Mexico.
How expected. So this actually marked a major shift in her writing, as she only had one horror novel written after this and moved on to noticeably lighter material. She no longer wanted to have violence associated with her work.
Did she think she got her daughter killed, or was it just like she had enough just like sadness? Yeah, like, she's had enough sadness in her life, and like
It was essentially, and the thing is, she also wrote a book about her daughter's case.
Oh wow!
And it was like a nonfiction book, so it was it was more like, hey, this is potentially what happened. Please help find it. But no, it's still unsolved to this day. And yeah, she was broken by it. That's where she's like, why am I writing about violence
all day
towards teenagers? And she's just like, I need to move on to lighter stuff. But she made a career out of it. So, but of course, Kevin Williamson, pre-Scream fame, of course, decided to adapt the novel himself and stick as close to the spirit of it as he could. Teenage melodrama and an underlying mystery. However, this is still Kevin Williamson. So, it obviously turned into a full-blown slasher.
Yeah, it did.
He changed the setting to a fishing town, as his father was a fisherman, and used the hook as an element of the film to pay homage to, of course, the hook hand urban legend.
It's more than an homage. Like, literally, they talk about it, like, seven times during the movie. Like, they're like, I've heard that urban legend.
Yeah, how coincidental.
I'm like, this is so... dumb. Why are we doing this, guys? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, so the executives thought that also, because unfortunately for him, he had not actually yet completely changed the horror landscape with meta horror. No, so no one actually wanted his adaptation of an old 70s young adult book with the slasher twist. Everybody was kind of over the shit. Though, of course, his script was shelved. His next script, Scream, would subsequently change the horror landscape forever. With meta-horror, of course, and bringing it into the mainstream. Of course, it inspired a huge resurgence in the slasher genre for the remainder of the 90s.
So sweet, sweet teen slashers.
Mm-hmm. Just kill all the pretty people.
All these high schoolers that are definitely too pretty to be in high school.
And not looking like high schoolers. Freddie Prinze Jr. did not look like a high schooler in this one.
No, none of them did.
No, but particularly Freddie. He was, to me, he was a little bit like...
Really? He had a little... I mean, okay, here's the thing, though. Is because, like, in my head, I see them as so much older, especially, like,
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I mean, not even her, because I watch so much Buffy, but Jennifer Love Hewitt.
She seemed the youngest to me.
I mean, yes, but, like, that's what I'm saying, is, like, they seemed so young that I was like, okay, it's kind, like, they're very young, but it, I mean, they're
we
also...
We know them as adults.
Though, yes, yeah, I know them so much as adults. Also, like, I liked that they kind of took, like, the fresh out of high school take on it.
Good take.
Instead of, like, a we're still in high school, because then there's, like, that air of, like, that suspension of disbelief of, like, okay, you're technically an adult, so it's fine.
That would be a scary movie.
Yeah.
But again, for more on actually this whole... Scream's effect on the genre, just listen to our episode on Scream early on in our podcast legacy here.
It was so early.
Yeah, was it like episode 14? I can't remember. It was way back. But of course, with his newfound status, Columbia straight up rushed to get I Know What You Did Last Summer made. They fucking booked it. And of course, they wanted to capitalize on having the creator or co-creator of Scream and a fresh market of horror-starved teens to sell tickets to. They needed that. And they had plenty. So, the process was so rushed, in fact, they completely left Lois Duncan out of any discussions for the film and vowed to release it by October of 1997 with the tagline, from the creator of Scream.
Of course!
But as always, they need a cast of teens to murder on screen. And they found some damn good ones. Alex, how do they find these motherfuckers?
So, the producers had the perfect idea of who would play the starring role of Julie, which is my mom's name, by the way, which is really weird, and establish the character as a Scream Queen, Melissa Joan Hart.
What?
Sabrina the Teenage Witch herself. It felt it was just a Scream ripoff, so she promptly turned their asses down.
Yeah, she was not. She was just like, are you kidding me? I already seen this fucking movie.
I've seen this movie, thanks, but no thanks. Mm. Luckily, though, another actress auditioned and blew everyone away. The one bit of casting everyone agreed on was Jennifer Love Hewitt as Julie. Though she actually read for the role of Helen, which obviously would eventually go to Sarah Michelle Gellar, the producers felt Hewitt had a certain vulnerability to her that was perfect for the lead role. She has that, like, that soft, innocent voice.
She does, yeah.
Totally perfect for the role.
And she's just like dainty enough. Yes. I think, yeah, like she's, there's something about like how skinny her neck is.
Like, or like
somebody protect her.
How like perfectly like straight and brown her hair is. Yes. That it's just like, okay, we get it.
I believe everything you say.
Jennifer Love Hewitt had actually just finished filming with Scream Queen Jamie Lee Curtis in the 90s family comedy House Arrest also.
Ooh, I saw that in theaters and I was like in love with Jennifer Love Hewitt. Little me, I forget how old I was, but like, oh my gosh, she's a fucking angel.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
When getting ready for the part of the Scream Queen, when getting ready for the part, the Scream Queen actually visited the young actress on the soundstage to wish her good luck on her first horror film and would occasionally give her hugs after shooting days.
Mm-hmm.
What a sweet mentor.
Right? Aww, yeah, they were
adorable.
They just were in the same area. She's just like, I don't know, it was a hard day. And Jamie Lee Curtis is just like, it's fine.
I
dealt with Carpenter. It's okay. It's
fine. I can see Jamie Lee Curtis just being like, it's at least it's not Carpenter.
Like, listen, I had to pick up leaves that we painted.
By hand.
Like, you guys have craft services.
Count your blessings.
$17 million.
$17 million. Hewitt also co-starred in Party of Five with newly crowned Scream Queen Neve Campbell. Every time. I'm like, this is the right way. And she's like, no, it's not. Say it the other way.
I'm going to phonetically spell her name every time. Just
Which is funny because she's literally my favorite person ever. And I will always fuck up her name.
She's great.
The producers initially wanted a 6'2" quarterback looking dude to play the part of Barry. But Ryan Felipe's audition went so well that they offered him the part instead, despite very much not being 6'2".
I think he's like 5'7".
It's okay.
It was weird seeing him punch around Freddie Prinze Jr.
looking up at him, he's like, you're not the boss of me! Yeah.
Adam!
I mean, he had an old Hollywood look to him that the team felt added to his intensity.
You know what he does, though? Like, his face is kind of like, if he was in the back...
It would have been funny if it was Matthew Lillard, though, I'm just saying.
He would have been of eye height to Freddie Prinze Jr., that's for sure.
I mean, that would have worked. If not taller.
Mm-hmm. But Ryan Felipe does have that. If put him in a zoot suit, I believe whatever character he's playing, he kind of has that vibe to him.
Yeah. I think just like the hair, I was just like, ah, yes, this is 90s. Mm-hmm. This is the 90s.
Give him a leather jacket. Just give him just a little bit of a leather jacket.
However, the producers did not want Freddie Prinze Jr. for the role of Ray, despite numerous auditions from the actor. He was much skinnier earlier in the audition process and had very long hair, which they just didn't fucking like.
No, yeah, they're like, you kidding me? You should be playing Shaggy. It's like, actually, I know a guy.
Zoinks. He was only known for being the son of comedian Freddie Prinze and a few small TV roles, but the actor wanted his goddamn role, so
yeah.
He cut his hair short and bulked up, giving him a much more everyman look that the director was going for. They finally cast him as Ray.
Yeah, it took a while.
They gave in.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I appreciate the tenacity.
Yeah. And then, of course, I just like him, fellow Latino boy. I'm like, yes, get the lead role, sir. Do it for us.
We need you.
I know you're Puerto Rican, but fine. It's fine.
When it came to casting Sarah Michelle Gellar, who was still only a season on her role as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, director Jim Gillespie states, "I wanted an actress that had a warmth to her, but could still come off as being a bitch," unquote.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very funny because, like, I had, and I think this is just because, like, I'm so into Buffy, but I was just like, not Buffy. It's not Buffy. Not Buffy.
Very much not Buffy.
But then she would, like, say words, and I'm like, okay, not Buffy.
But she would have some conviction sometimes, but she's still, like, it's like she has such a dominant presence to see her try to play second fiddle's weird.
Yes.
Like, she's trying to be, like, not tell Jennifer to, not slap her and wake her up and be like, you're being stupid.
I know. I just wanted her to, like, grab a steak and start slaying. You know? Like, I just was just like, okay, let's save the day. And then, you know, she obviously gets, you know, her unfortunate demise. And I was
She was so close to surviving that shit. Spoilers. But yes.
I mean, the movie is...
That's true. We're not even going to the plot.
The movie's 27... Or 20... Yeah. 23 years old, so...
23 years old. Jesus. Fucking life. All right, well... Now let's talk about how they made I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is actually pretty fun. So...
Yay!
Filming took place on March 31st, 1997 in Sonoma County, California and Southport, North Carolina. It actually lasted 50 days, which is pretty... It's kind of a longer shoot than we're normally used to on these.
Very different coasts.
Yeah, like, way different, right? But it kind of looks... Like, they kind of match a little bit.
Well, it's funny, because, like, the whole time, because it's, like, very, like, fishing heavy, like, the whole time I was thinking, like, northeast... Like, I was thinking more like a northeast.
Yeah. Like a bay kind of county.
Yeah. I was thinking like a Cape Cod type situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. They were at Cape Fear. Yeah. So, it fits. It fits. But the film was shot under the guise that the violence wouldn't be too gratuitous, actually. And that the story would pace the film rather than the kills, since director Jim Gillespie actually didn't view it as a horror film.
Okay, weird, but all right. Also, can we mention Johnny Galecki in this movie?
It's coming up. Yeah, no, he's... isn't that a weird one?
I was just like, ugh!
He plays Perv real well.
I was just like, please, no.
He plays like, oh, she's too drunk to... I'll walk her to her apartment. Like, he's that guy.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
I don't like this.
It's like, where are her keys?
She needs accompaniment. I hate it.
God damn it. The director liked the town of Southport so much, he actually adjusted the script so that they could film more scenes in the town, actually. So Freddie Prinze Jr. was the only cast member old enough to buy beer. So if the main cast wanted a party after a day of shooting, he would often take trips to the local liquor store.
That is adorable.
Right?
They were so young.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like that kind of has some redemption in my... gives it some redemption in my eyes to, like, the closeness of, like, their actual ages to, like, the ages of their characters.
They were right there. They were just a little over high school.
They were barely.
Mm-hmm. And they're part of...
That is so sweet. Right? Oh, my God.
Oh, fucking guy. But of course, the team actually mostly shot late in the night, which caused a lot of commotion in the small towns they were filming in. People were like, the locals were pissed. These goddamn commotion. But of course, contrary to popular belief, Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar did not fall in love on the set of this film.
Aww.
In actuality, their characters only talked to each other about twice.
Well, yeah, because, like, obviously, like, they're not in a relationship. I thought they were, like, because, like, going... Because, like, again, just... I mentioned this on the last episode. I've never seen this movie before.
Yeah.
So, going into this movie, I'm like, oh, Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar. They met on this movie. They fell in love. They're clearly a couple. Mm-hmm. I was wrong.
Nope. But they did, however, develop a really, really solid friendship that, in within 2 years, turned into a romance. So,
that's so sweet. Yeah,
they were just bros. They hung out. He's like, oh my, that's the guy that buys the beer. What was your life like?
Wow, like...
Your dad was a comedian.
And you're Buffy.
Yeah. Oh, his poor Freddie Prinze. He had a rough one. Yeah. Yeah, that's a different story, though. We'll get to that eventually. But the scene where Jennifer Love Hewitt yells, "What are you waiting for?" was actually conceived by a fan.
Oh, God.
No, it was conceived by a fan. There was apparently a contest where a fan would get to direct a scene in the film. And the winner decided to add this scene for reasons. No one will really know. But she had to do it. But Jennifer Love Hewitt hated. She did not understand this. She didn't like it.
Because it went down in infamy.
But,
then it
but she was a trooper. And she just went along and played the scene fucking straight as directed by the contestant. So, this would turn out to be the most iconic scene in the entire film, parodied numerous times since its release.
I just picture Anna Faris
from Scary God, from Scary Movie. Absolutely.
Like, parodying this scene, and it's just...
Oh my
chef's
God.
Kiss. Like, yeah. Her dramatic, just flailing.
Just the full-on, just like 720 spin. Oh.
What are you waiting for?
No, that was made up by a random kid that won a contest. We would never have gotten it without that.
That's fucking hilarious. Awesome.
Oh my god. But of course there was also a giant continuity error in the finale, as Julie had her sweater on for some of the scenes, and she was without it for, of course, others.
Thankfully, I was not sober enough to notice this.
Well, they fixed it.
Oh.
They fixed it. See? See, here's what happened. The crew was actually so tired and were filming on an actual vessel in the Cape River Fear, which terrified everyone, that it just really went just past them. They just were like, oh, fuck, did we tell her to leave the jacket on? But to fix this, they added a scene where, of course, Julie escaped the killer through the ice bay in the ship, using her sweater to tie down the door, thus saving the film from an embarrassing continuity error and ensuring that Jennifer Love Hewitt would be in the fantasies of teenage hearts across America. Yes, because child me was like, she's getting rid of the sweater, God! So fucking hot.
Okay, so there was like this one scene in the movie when she goes to answer the phone, and like, I don't know what it is about like the angle, but she looks particularly like tiny waist, like huge tits, and I'm like, what is with the angle? Like, I'm like, this is like, I'm like, oh my god.
Like, did you use your good film for this one? Like, what the hell?
Well, it was just like the outfit, because it's also like, it was like tastefully cropped, mm-hmm. and like, it was like a mini jacket. I was like, okay.
Yeah, right? They did not have to dress her slutty at all. She just wore whatever. You put some rags on her and be like, oh my god, she is rocking those rags.
I know, I was just like, you're beautiful.
Some people. But of course, when it came time to test screen, the team came to one very unfortunate conclusion. It just wasn't bloody enough. Much to the director's disdain, they added blood and gore effects to many of the kills, and even a new death at the beginning. Yes, John Galecki's character was supposed to survive, apparently, but inevitably Max would be murdered and provide some solace for folks who did not like him in The Big Bang Theory.
I don't like The Big Bang Theory at all, so no. This was really, really satisfying.
Nice. It's nice seeing him hooked in the fucking face. I agree.
Oh, I was just like, wow, good. I'm glad you
like,
got...
Like, wow, gory-ass kill too. Hell yeah, dude. Don't let him
smile. It was
again.
Bad. I was just like, ah.
Like a nasty one, yeah. But of course, with more gore, a really quick turnaround, and truly amped up 90s teenagers still on that scream high... I Know What You Did Last Summer was ready for the big fucking box office.
Ah, yes.
It would have some hurdles, though. So, Alex, what happened?
What happened? Columbia Pictures found themselves in hot water almost immediately when trying to promote this film. They used the tagline from the creator of Scream, which caught the attention of teenagers in the summer of 1997, as well as the legal department of Miramax Films, who made Scream. Thanks, guys.
There's a wide net on that one, huh?
I know. In Miramax's eyes, Wes Craven was just as responsible for the creation of Scream as Kevin Williamson, who actually asked that the tagline be removed prior to Columbia Pictures telling him to fuck off, presumably.
We're guessing.
Miramax ended up winning the suit a week after the film's release. Ooh.
Yeah, nasty.
To add to the heat, original author Lois Duncan was adamant in her hate for the film. She was outraged as her original work was mostly nonviolent and she had swore off using such tropes anyways after her daughter's murder. She fucking hated it and let the media know every chance she had how much she did.
No, she was on whatever circuit they'd get her, be like, yeah, this movie's trash and blah, blah, blah. Like, she did not like it. She was more eloquent because she's a novelist. But
right. Yeah. You're not, so.
Yeah, no, exactly. This was garbage.
Critics were also noticeably soured on the film, receiving just at best.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who liked it were generally lukewarm, and those who hated it fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Our boy Roger Ebert opens his one-star review with, "The best shot in this film is the first one. Not a good sign." Oh, the one over the ocean?
I think so, with the fucking music playing in the back. It was like 90s fucking...
It was very Lost Boys, gotta say.
Yeah, no, it was. It was.
Like, as I was watching it, I'm like, this is the Lost Boys.
Just a few years later. Oh, 10 years later. Jeez.
Yeah.
Damn. Time. All right.
John Petrakis of the Chicago Tribune stated, wastes more opportunities than it does teenagers.
Jeez.
Wow. Mean. And that's wild, considering a lot of people die in this movie.
I know, right?
One positive review did leak out of Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman, who wrote, quote, "The story has more holes than bodies do, but the shocks are efficient, and Party of Five's Jennifer Love Hewitt knows how to scream with soul," unquote.
I agree. She knows how to let on that, like, I'm scared.
Yes, I will give that to her.
Mm-hmm.
With all this negative press and legal trouble, was the film doomed before audiences even had a chance to see just what these teenagers did last summer, Anthony Fuentes?
Nope. No.
No. Fuck no. I Know What You Did Last Summer opened at a hard number one at the box office, repeated that feat again a week later, made back its budget and then some, ultimately earning, again, $126 million in theaters, making it one of the highest-grossing slasher films of all time.
I believe it's the sixth highest-grossing slasher film of all time, and one of the top horror films.
Are you fucking kidding
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
Okay, hell, even the original novel was not immune to the film's success. It pretty much promptly skyrocketed the novel in sales,
mm-hmm.
making Lois Duncan a lot of money in the process.
She's talking all that shit, and her bank account's just like...
Oh.
Oh, young adult didn't pay this.
Kevin Williamson had another hit under his belt, and suddenly the up and coming actors in this film found themselves to be majorly bankable movie stars.
Their careers launched.
Yeah.
It, like, launched after this. Ugh. But of course.
My heart.
Isn't that crazy, though? Everybody's talking shit and just being like, well, this fucking movie, and the author hates it, and everybody's, you know, it's like, oh, Kevin Williamson can't do it again.
It totally implies that the movie's gonna absolutely tank. Like, mm-hmm. I bet you everyone, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, like, they're all just, like, sitting there just like, fuck.
Like, this is bad press, Jesus, gotta move back home, and they're just like, nope, I'm gonna buy my mama a home.
Money, money, money!
Yeah. Oh my god. Of course, Scream, or Scream. It's still Scream-ish.
I mean, it's Scream.
Scream adjacent, yeah. I Know What You Did Last Summer. It became one of the more fundamental post-Scream horror films thanks to its association, of course, with Kevin Williamson and the star-studded cast. For a closer look at just how it was received and its legacy, how about some Letterboxd reviews up in this bitch? How
Yay!
About that? How about we go through a couple of those? So, the film has... Let me drink a little bit real quick. A 2.7 rating.
Jesus Christ.
On Letterboxd.
Barely above the center.
With only 2.5K reviews.
Wow,
so,
that's
yeah,
it?
That's low for as big a success it was. It's actually pretty low.
I mean, I guess that makes sense because, like, I think it was probably popular, but I don't think it cemented itself in the Americana memory.
No, because it was popular, but it was also, like, within its era that
right.
big.
Well, that's
outside of its era, kind of tough.
Exactly. Well, that's yeah. what I'm saying. Like, it's no Scream.
No, exactly. Yeah, definitely isn't. But, of course, Jack gives the film 3.5 stars out of 5, stating, "The scene where Sarah Michelle Gellar wakes up to find her hair has been cut off is better than the horse head scene from The Godfather." Jesus. User Pube. Gives the film.
Where do you find these?
I spend a surprising amount of time looking for the good ones. Gives the film 1.5 stars, saying, quote, "I'm glad all the people who I've drunkenly ran over and threw into the ocean have never come back to haunt me," end quote.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Great user, Pube.
Yeah, Pube.
I'm gonna call the cops on you.
This guy named Pube. Okay, ma'am.
How much have you had to drink today? 2 White Claws!
Matt Curion gives the film 4.5 stars in his review, saying, "A complete and total slasher classic. Also, holy shit, this cast is so hot, I'm surprised my TV didn't melt."
Agreed.
Yeah, 100% Matt. 100 fucking percent. And finally, Kayla, in her very assertive 5-star review, says, "It's perfect, don't argue with me."
It's true.
Alright, Kayla.
I mean... If I saw this movie in the 90s and was just...
No, you would love it.
I would, like, I wish I had seen this earlier. Like, I truly do.
I saw it in theaters.
So, we're probably going to get into this, but, like, my mother, mm-hmm. when I was just like, oh, recovering, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and she was just like, Isn't that the one with Ghostface? And I was just like, that's Scream. And I'm like, it's written by the same person, though. I would understand why you had that.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I liked it, though. And I was just like, Scream or I Know What You Did Last Summer? And I was just, and she was just like, I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I'm like, are you sure?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Like, Jennifer Love Hewitt. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, it was literally like back in the day, it was second to Scream. It was second.
It seems like a lot of people saw it.
Yeah, like, no,
so
yeah.
I wouldn't put it past my mom to have seen it.
It was
even huge. Though she doesn't like scary movies.
It was fucking huge. Like, I'm not going to lie, it was big, which is crazy.
That's crazy. So in 1997, my mom was like 26, 27.
Oh, she was prime demographic right there.
Yeah, she was like, yeah.
I was 10. Jeez. And I was still just like, I want to see the next one.
Give it to me.
But anyways, I Know What You Did Last Summer was, of course, very heavily parodied in Scary Movie from the Wayans brothers, as well as many pieces of media from the MTV generation.
Okay.
So Comedy Central, everybody.
I think it was an incredible disservice about the fact that I saw Scary Movie before I saw this movie.
Oh my gosh. So you missed a little bit of the references, or you kind of understood what it was?
No. Like, I saw this movie and I'm like, isn't that from Scary? Oh, I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
So, like, it was more funny to me because I was just like, didn't Anna Faris?
To be fair, it's still a little funny.
But, like, I feel like if I had seen this again earlier in my life, like, yeah. I feel like certain scenes wouldn't have been as funny, and they would have had it, like, they would have been slightly more, like, impactful, maybe.
I think it would have been genuine cheese versus, like, oh, this is cheesy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, like, after seeing...
Heartfelt cheese.
Because here's the thing, is, like, I'm also not even a huge Scary Movie fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like... Like, that's not very much my wheelhouse of humor.
Yeah.
However, I do think Scary Movie is funny if I'm in, like... No, if I'm really stoned. I'll be...
really stoned, yeah.
If I'm being perfectly honest.
Oh, my
honest.
God. Wait till we cover Scary Movie. That's gonna happen.
That'll be a 420 episode.
Oh, that will so be a 420. Oh, my God. Alex, you son of a bitch.
You did it.
You figured out a 420 episode. You totally did it.
Scary Movie would be a great
I don't care
one.
What day that lands on. We're releasing the episode that day. We're like, it's going to be a week and a half out. I'm sorry, guys.
But no.
Or within 3 days.
Scary Movie would be a great addition to our repertoire.
Because it's
just so dumb.
Let's see how 2020 looks. 2021.
Cheers.
Jesus. Yeah, fucking whatevs. By God. Okay. So, but of course, because of just how successful the film was financially, the impact and its impact, of course, on pop culture at the time, Columbia was ready for a motherfucking follow-up. And more screams from Jennifer Love Hewitt, seemingly into nowhere. So, Kevin Williamson returned to horror immediately after with two teenage-focused heavy hitters just a year later with The Faculty.
I forgot he did The Faculty.
Yep, see our 7th episode for more on that one.
It was our 7th episode.
Yeah, and that was a year after this.
We were babies.
We were babies.
It was a year and a half ago, but
and
like,
we do a play-by-play on that one. But it's like kind of it's worth
okay,
it.
The Faculty was great, though.
It's such a good movie. That's such a good movie.
Also very Kevin Williamson.
More than this.
Like, between The Faculty, Scream, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, like, you get such, like, a taste of, like, Kevin Williamson's writing that it's just like, okay.
He was on top of the fucking world.
Yeah.
God damn. Of course, and Halloween H2O that same fucking year.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, my God. You would have, like, beat the shit out of my brother. We were talking about the Halloween movies because he was like, okay, explain to me, like, the Halloween movies. And I was like...
I can't even do that. That's
and I got to Halloween H2O, and he's like, H2O?
Yeah,
and I was just like, listen.
Everybody knows it's dumb.
It's stupid. I think, and I was just like, and he was just like, does it have something to do with water? And I'm like, no.
There's no water in the film.
No, it has nothing.
Characters don't even drink water.
It's just called H2O. Like, that's just what it's called.
Yes.
It's just called Halloween H2O. And he's just,
I think it was supposed to be called H20, but people were like,
it's
no. No. What, are you kidding me? No, Kevin Williamson, we're not gonna call it that.
We don't negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
Speaking of my brother, really quick side note, he did come to stay with me for a couple of days, and he was going through my Hulu and like my recommended movies, and the house that Jack built was on there.
Oh, it's on Hulu. Ryan Hollinger just did a video on that one.
Yes, he did. However, my brother, not knowing anything about it, watched the trailer, and I traumatized him completely on accident. I was asleep in the other room, and I was driving him home, and he was like, "So I watched this trailer that was recommended on your Hulu, and it was for the house that Jack built," and I was just like, "Fuck!"
The Lars Berman movie? No. Lars von Trier, guys, I know.
And he was just like, it seemed really, like, and he was just like, I don't ever want to, like, he's not, like, a scary movie.
Like, no, that's, like, the worst.
Well, and I'm just like, and I tried to explain, like, I was just like, Lars von Trier is a very fucked up director. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, what do you mean? And I explained, like, Antichrist. I was just like, it's not... never watch that movie, and if you do, I never showed it to you.
Yes. You never even heard about it from any association with my account.
Because I would be murdered by our mother.
Jeez, just the level of trauma. Like, you can't just go into that.
Right, just from the trailer, and I'm like, I would love to introduce my brother to horror, but, like, Lars von Trier is not the way to go.
Baby steps. Baby steps.
I wanted to show him I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah, he'd probably love that.
I think he would. But, yeah, so it was a very funny little snafu, because he was going through my Hulu, and my Hulu, obviously, is going to recommend things like The House That Jack Built.
Oh, my
because
God.
Because all I do is watch horror movies. God damn it. I felt so bad. I was just like, I'm sorry.
He didn't watch it. He didn't watch it. No. That's good.
But he watched, like, the trailer. I think he watched, like, a
more explicit trailer.
He watched something, because he knew things about the movie. Like, he was just like, and then there were, like, bodies, and I was like, fuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will be paying for your therapy.
Oh my God. Forever.
Happy birthday.
Oh, jeez.
He turned 17 this week.
Oh my gosh, he's so tiny. The world. Oh, 17 in fucking 2020, Jesus.
Born in 2013.
Madness.
Or
2003.
Yeah.
2013. He turned 7 and watched The House That Jack Built.
My sister is turning 6 this week, too.
Oh, fuck. That's an interesting age. Novalee is turning... Oh, she's already 6, but she you know, 6 was a cool year.
Yeah.
That's when they talk, like, a lot. I mean, they talk a lot already, but,
my,
like...
My sister talks a lot now.
But when they, like, are starting to be more intelligent about their talking. Like, they're very, like...
Novalee is also, like, a really cool name.
No, she's awesome. Yeah. But it's weird seeing, like, the... I'm starting to see if she's going to have a little valley girl. Like, a little... I can tell in her storytelling, which is becoming more consistent.
My sister, I was working from home, and, like, I was on Facebook because it's part of my job. And, like, she came over and sat on the couch, and she's like... Do you want to play? And I was like, I can't, I'm working. And she looked over at my computer screen, and I was on Facebook, and she's like, doesn't look like you're working. And I was like...
This is my work. I pay for things because of this.
I was like, I have more money than you.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It was... And I was just, like, flabbergasted. I was just like, okay, Holly, thanks.
Oh, that's awesome.
Anyway, sorry for our brief aside about our family.
That's fine. That's imagine what scary movies they're going to get going forward. But back in the olden times of the next year, 1998, after, of course, or with these two Kevin Williams and heavy hitters coming out, Columbia wasn't about to let those heavy hitters get in the way of that sweet, sweet franchise money.
Shut the fuck up, Columbia.
No, they weren't. And they rushed a sequel. With 1998, I still know what you did last summer. Yes, it is bad. But for the sake of a play-by-play one day, we may very well cover this one. Because it's that bad.
Is it?
Yeah. Like, so bad it's good bad. I'm telling you.
Really?
But until then, of course.
Well, they set it up for a sequel. Like, the end?
Okay, yeah, but, like, that happens, but it's discarded immediately. It's one of those sequels. It's like a Jason sequel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, with that trying to emulate Kevin Williams in writing.
Oh, because he didn't...
Nah. But one day, guys. Not today. Today, we gotta tell you how we feel about this fucking movie right here. So, Alex, What did you think about I Know What You Did Last Summer? And what's your history with this movie? First time, right?
I know what you did last summer. Not the Shawn Mendes song.
I thought you said, I went Sam Mendes. I'm like, the guy who directed American Beauty?
Shawn Mendes. I know. I know what you did last summer.
I know, but my film mind took over first.
Before the song. The modern pop culture?
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Okay. God damn it, Anthony.
Thoughts?
Head empty. No, I liked the movie. I thought it was kind of like, I mean, yes, it was very cheesy. It was a great escape from my brain.
No, 100%, right?
Like, it was great.
You don't have to think about this at all. And if you do, it's actually kind of funny.
Yes. Was I looking at glasses while I was watching this movie? Yes. Like, it's like, I will say, this is one of those movies that, like, it does not demand your full attention for you to get the gist of
the music
happening.
Will tell you when you need to look up. The music will tell you when you need to look up, all right?
It's true.
You're like, whoa, hook. It's a hook a foot.
It's true. It's so fucking true. Like, you actually nailed it, like, dead on. Like, there were times when, like, I would be like, oh, wait, I'm missing something. And, like, I would stop and, like, look up. And, like, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, you have my attention. And, like,
I mean, there's a story, but the characters reiterate it so much. You're like, oh, right.
Remember when we went to that creepy lady's house 20 minutes ago?
Yeah. Oh, she said this information? Like, yeah, this information, right? That information.
No, but for all intents and purposes, I liked the movie. It was very, like, teeny. Like, it reminded me of, like, a simpler time.
Yes.
Like, did it give me 90s nostalgia? Absolutely.
100%. The fucking outfits.
Yes. Like, the outfits alone, like, I was just, like, on it. Like, I was just like, okay, I get it. Like, this is great. Also, like, it made me remember that really weird summer after I graduated high school, before I went to college, and, like, what that was like. Also, coming home from college and seeing the people who, like, were just like, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and, like, they were just like, actually, I'm working at an auto shop, and, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, they captured that very well, actually.
Like, how, like, you know, how, like, a lot of people have, like,
dreams.
Or ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
Or certain ambitions, and, like, how, like, life does not always work.
Life is like, you're gonna have to wait a while for that one, buddy.
Yeah, like Sarah Michelle Gellar with New York City. Like, it's just like, okay, you're gonna have to pump the brakes on New York City.
I love how Julie was, like, so by default, like, oh, I believed in her, so she totally went, right? And they're like, well,
she's a perfume.
Yeah. Ugh. Being managed by the girl that was all bitch to her at
that
party.
What's her sister?
Was it? She was at the party too, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was her sister.
Was it?
Yeah.
I keep forgetting. Jesus.
Because
you're right.
She shows
in the
up
same
at
house.
Her house. Yeah,
yep,
they're sisters.
Same house. You're right. Yes.
I can't believe I picked up on that detail.
You get that?
You didn't.
That's how little that character. It's one of those. You're like, ah, okay, they're there.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But no, overall, I did like the movie. It does not require your utmost attention. It is not like a, it is, let's see, how do I, it is a summer movie.
Yeah.
Like, through and through, for sure.
When we call a movie a cheeseburger, this is a cheeseburger you saw in a commercial, and you're like, oh, I wonder what that tastes like. You're like, yeah, pretty good.
You look it up.
Wendy's nailed it. Cool.
When Wendy's nailed it.
Yeah, yeah. Like earlier today. Jeez.
Well, remember, you still have a chicken sandwich, so...
They could redeem themselves.
They could redeem themselves.
Limp dick fries, though. Those are the worst. Ugh. Just soggy, no salt.
Sad life. Anyway, but no, what did you think?
Oh my god, I loved it. No, I love this movie. Like, well, I really do.
Also... You lived through, or you remember the 90s a little bit better than I do.
Absolutely, no. That's why I loved it. I honestly, like, I watched it again. It brought me back. And I've seen this movie a million times. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was younger, I would just watch, with Scream and all the other horror films I like to watch, I just slap it on.
You were 10 when this came out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it came on fucking tape, like, a
that
year later.
That would make sense. I was 2 when this came out.
And then we'd rent it when we wanted to. Go to the cousin's house and like, hey, let's watch a scary movie. Hey, how about I Know What You Did Last Summer? Like, it's literally just part of
it's the, like, part of your childhood.
The lifestyle of the 90s child. So, of course, that was parents that let you watch horror.
Do I remember seeing this in the horror rows of Blockbuster Video? Absolutely. Yes.
With all those pretty faces and a hook staring at you?
Yes, yeah. That and between that and, like, Candyman, like, good. This and, like, Silence of the Lambs. Blockbuster.
Two much more, more filmically better films, for sure.
Sure. Candyman, sure. Oh my gosh. Well, there's like a bunch of other movies where I was just like, just based off of the covers alone, it's just like imprinted in my brain for no reason whatsoever other than the fact that I was like 5 and impressionable. And I was just a sponge.
And just art gotcha.
Well, no, I was a sponge and I would just soak up anything that I just laid my young precious eyes on. And I would just be like... Like, this is mine now. It's just in my brain forever.
I mean...
Now, you know, I can't remember what I had for breakfast last week. But that's fine.
But that's how this movie is, though. Like, that was during my, like, coming into teenage era. So, within that. Preteen.
Yeah. But, well, like, you see that, and then it's like, it gives you, like, that heavily romanticized, like, high school ideal.
Exactly.
Where you're just like, I want to go to, like, a beach party with my high school friends. Yeah,
and the most beautiful girl is Jennifer Love Hewitt, and you're like, that's my dream. Just pretty dark-haired lady. And house arrest before that. I mean, just stacked on.
I get that.
Ugh. But, okay. No, this movie, I think, it's a very efficient horror film. Like, it doesn't dilly-dally. It has somewhat of a mystery, and it's, like, fun throughout. Like, I wouldn't say it's, like... The melodrama is just stupid enough to be engaging.
That's the thing, though. It's, like, my only critique is that, like, the writing is cheesy, and the delivery of the cheesiness is just, like, kind of stupid in some parts.
That's what I love about it, though. Oh my God. I love how hyper
it's... Like when they're all arguing on the side of the road after they hit the guy, and I'm just like, can we, like, please stop for a second?
I love how every character, like, they kind of... I would say the beginning of the film's still cheesy, but they still were, like, a little subdued.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the archetypes were, like, okay, everybody play your archetype to 10. When you hit that motherfucker.
Yeah, they just turn the dial up.
They turn it up. Like, Freddie Prinze, you're going to be a little bitch right now. And Ryan Phillippe, you're going to be mad.
You're going to be a douchebag.
You're going to be... And Jennifer Love Hewitt, you just stand your ground and then just, like, you're just not going to win.
No.
Sarah Shigella is just like, well, I don't fuck... Well, we should probably...
you're going to be wearing your crown the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's true. If I want to think of, like, horror tropes... I thought that was going to be something heavy, and I was like, it's a napkin. I think that this movie helped establish, or, like, helped cement those, like, tropes that, like, we've come to rely on today.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, I think, like, some of the line delivery, like, I'm like, I know you guys can act.
Yeah.
Like, well, I know you guys.
Well, this was still early before you. This was them learning how to act.
I think so. Yeah. And I realized that because, like, I realize, like, I'm like, oh, this is, like, Freddie Prinze Jr. is, like, one of his, like, first movies, if not his, like, first movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I get it now. This is, like, before.
They're like, okay, you see what just happened there? We're going to give you some acting lessons because... You got other movies.
You gotta tone it down a little bit.
You gotta be with Rachel Lee Cook in the next movie. So, and she's been doing this for a while.
So let's just reel it in a little bit.
And Matthew Lillard's in that movie, and we don't have to teach him anything. He's just gonna be Matthew Lillard.
I love Matthew. This is a pro Matthew Lillard podcast.
100%.
If we haven't 100%. Already established that.
That's my boy.
He's wonderful.
Oh.
If you're listening to this, Matthew Lillard, I love you.
You're my boy.
So, okay, we kind of talked about this, but what makes this film so emblematic of the 90s?
This whole fucking movie? The, like, whole everything?
It's true. Like, the shots, the music, the clothes.
The wardrobe, the way that each character talks to each other is just 90s AF.
Very 90s.
It's like, if you want a time capsule of what the 90s was like for people in this age range, you're going to watch... Because it's not as quippy as Scream. So it's like, Well, here's a little more, you know, in a different take of hyper 90s.
I understand right now why Matthew Lillard couldn't have been in this movie, because then it would have just been like Kevin Williamson and Matthew Lillard, but like...
Yeah.
But also, I just think it would have been great.
But I mean, Ryan Phillippe is also 90s as fuck, too.
Yeah.
And he just is.
It's true. He's super, super 90s.
He's the evolution of the 90s jock, or the jock archetype done in the 90s, where he doesn't have to be 6'2".
He's so aggro.
He is. He totally is.
See, like...
The last of the bros.
Just short and angry.
Mm-hmm.
You're not short and angry, which is why I like you.
Just short.
Exactly.
Short and sarcastic.
That's fine. And you have road rage, but who does it in LA?
Oh my god. I got so mad driving here. I got so... Like, with the laptop anger, like, the residual laptop anger because my laptop's being a piece of shit.
So, I had to drive to Palmdale to get my COVID test.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
One of the most dangerous actual cities in Los Angeles County.
I never had to get out of my car.
That's good.
It was good. For the best.
But it's, like, number 7, so you're fine.
Oh, great.
You know what the top 3 are?
What?
Little Tokyo, Lincoln Heights, and Chinatown, right in my hood.
I was going to say, like, immediately surrounding your neighborhood.
Yep.
But no. And then Palmdale. That's great.
Yeah. And then Palmdale.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. Getting to Palmdale is, like, the whole time I was driving, I was, like, my jaw was just, like, open. Like, I was just like, where the fuck am I?
I said Palmdale, not San Bernardino, GPS.
Yeah. Or, like, I'm not trying to go to the high desert. Like, it was, like, I was just like...
Hesperia.
That's seriously, though. But, no, I was just like, this is awful. Mm-hmm. And then I got there, and then the directions took me to the middle of a field.
Your cash is like, what are you talking about Palmdale for?
You repping Palmdale, fool?
Mm.
But no, yeah, I got there and I was just like, this is a nightmare. This is a fucking nightmare.
No, it's bad.
It was awful. And then it took me 4 hours.
Jesus, fuck.
On one of the hottest days so far this year and in my car with no air conditioning. So.
Do you have good tunes?
Yeah, I was listening to the last podcast.
There you go. See, that's good tunes right there. Ugh. But yes, what about this movie screams 90s to you?
I mean, kind of what you said. For me, a lot of it was just, like, the set and, like, it just... You don't really have a lot of movies that have that, like, small-town Americana feel to it.
With 90s.
With that 90s vibe to it anymore.
Because usually when they go small town, they're like, go rural, and they go this. But, like, no, you guys are just fucking teens.
Yeah, you guys are just teenagers. But it's, like, this, like, sleepy little beach town, but it's not, like, in the Stephen King sense. Like, it's not, like, Maine or whatever.
No, it's definitely not Stephen King.
You know? No. But it's just, like, this, I mean, it's just a fisherman's town. Like, it's just, like, they know what they're about.
Mm-hmm. It's a little romper.
I like that, but it has that 90s feel to it. Like when you see like the stores and stuff, mm-hmm. and it's just like I'm like, okay, this feels like the department store feel.
Yeah.
However, like the outfits, how it made a point, how every single day everyone was wearing something different, and
they're just like. Open button-ups with shirts.
Well, and it's just like establishing shot of Jennifer Love Hewitt in her cute outfit that's like very form-fitting but not too revealing because she's a little depressed right now because she killed someone last summer. Like,
I like that. That was good.
But, you know, like, that's how, like, they're just like, oh, it's very, like, you can tell the wardrobe department had a fucking field day
absolutely.
With this movie. So.
Oh, but real quick then, on that note, since we're in the 90s theme here, what's the most obvious Kevin Williamsy thing about, what gives away that this is a Kevin Williamson movie?
There were so many one-liners where I was just
right?
I was just like, really?
They're like response one-liners. They're like, hey, this is the situation right now. Well, fucking da-da-da.
Yeah, it's just like, well, then I guess we'll just handle it.
Won't yeah.
We? And it's just like, what? But it's just like so many like one-liners that are, it's just like. This was made for a trailer. Like, you guys wrote this with the intention of it being like cut into a trailer,
teenage
right?
Teenage Aaron Sorkin, essentially. That's a Kevin Williamson writing right there.
Right. But no, I can't think of a lot of them right off the top of my head because it was, again...
I think the archetypes...
The character archetypes, like, just the... I will say the things that differentiate this from Scream that I appreciate is that this movie has like very clearly established, like very heavily tropey characters where it's like it's very obvious like what tropes they are, as opposed with Scream where it's like it's a little bit more muddled.
No, there's a play on it. They want you to think about it.
And it's a little bit more fun in that sense. But, like, with which I think is actually kind of, like, a flippy flop. But, like, if they had these characters from I Know What You Did Last Summer in Scream, I think it would have been, like, a little bit too on the nose.
Yeah.
But, like, I think...
Well, they play it too straight, comparatively.
Yeah.
They're, like, in the movie. Yeah. And Scream, they're just, like, about the movie.
I think having, like, the characteristics of that in I Know What You Did Last Summer that also lent themselves to Scream, I think, I think were both beneficial. But yeah, I think the characters are, like, obviously the biggest indicator and, like, in the dialogue for
me,
it's the dialogue, no, obviously, is just, like, the biggest indicator that this is a Kevin Williamson film.
Because it's, like, rushed awesomeness.
It's rushed chaos. Yes. I don't know if I would call it awesomeness, because, like, some of the writing felt a little weak at parts for me. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm watching this as a 25-year-old, not a 10-year-old in a movie theater who's in love with Jennifer Love Hewitt. Oh, I mean, God. I'm a 25-year-old in love with Jennifer Love Hewitt. The little glint and twinkle in Anthony's eye right now, he's just like...
She was my queen. My goddamn queen to this day.
She is also on Criminal Minds.
Yeah, I know. That's your association with her, though, right?
It's not. My association with her is Ghost Whisperer.
Oh, Ghost Whisperer. That's right.
That's my association with her.
That was my youngest sister's Ghost Whisperer. That was her association with her.
Yeah. Like, I just, like, whenever I see her, I'm like, oh, from Ghost Whisperer. Like, I can't, like...
When I see her, I'm like, oh, from my most beautiful dreams. Yes. Okay, yeah.
From my hopes and dreams.
From everything, yeah. From my heart.
So that makes sense why, like, Eliza Dushku is, like... it for you also.
Oh yeah, the same, like, vein, right? Yeah,
you have a type.
I have a type for sure. Little pale dark haired ladies.
That is super
pale funny. Petite dark haired my But how would you actually rate Jennifer Love Hewitt as a Scream queen, and would she be able to survive other killers and infamous slashers? If so, which ones?
Oh, good question. I think this is a tricky question. So I'll tackle the first part. I don't think she is necessarily Scream Queen material.
No?
No.
Why not?
You're just like, defend yourself.
No, come on. I'm going to toss this fucking coffee over there.
No. I don't know. I just, like, she doesn't have the, this is going to sound so, like, weird, but, like, so, in film theory, like, in, like, the final girl, like, kind of trope or whatever, there's, like, certain characteristics of the final girl.
Yeah.
I think she's too feminine.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. In what sense?
Like, for example, I don't know. I think that there's, I'm gonna completely butcher this, but it's the quote I'm thinking is from Men, Women, and Chainsaws.
Okay. No, good. Please inform the audience.
It's from a book by Carol Glover, and it's about, like, basically just, like, the final girl, like, it's the book that establishes the final girl theory and, like, that trope and everything. And basically it goes through what makes a final girl, and it's obviously, like, all the tropes that we established, like, we like, kind of, like, what you and I both know. But it kind of goes into a little bit more of, like, the gender theory behind it. For example, like Sydney. Like, Sydney is can be shortened to Sid. And, like, Lori is already this, like, kind of meek, bookwormy, kind of, like not super feminine, like, but, like, smart girl.
Yeah.
And I think that she has, like, parts of that. Like, I think she has parts of the final girl, like, kind of element to her. But by the end of the movie, like, she just doesn't have, like, that, like, badassery about her.
Oh, you're kind of getting to a point I was thinking about, actually.
You know what
you're
I mean? Right. Yeah. Where she's, yeah. like, because, like, by the end of it, she's just, like, kind of trying to put it past her, and she's just like, I survived. Like, it just, it doesn't, mm-hmm. it doesn't really click in that same, like, empowered sense that, like, Sydney, for example, and I keep going back to Sydney, because, like, she's, like, my fucking queen.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I think you touched on a good thing there, because I was going to say, like, she's a final girl that relies on supporting characters.
Yeah.
100%. Like, she's, she can't 100% do it herself, but... You sent a message over there. Uh-huh. But she has enough of the elements to make it to the end of the movie. But she's going to need a Freddie Prinze Jr. or somebody to kind of get through.
Yeah.
So if anything, she'll be able to survive situations where she's like purely running. So she could go like Texas Chainsaw, maybe survive that.
Yes. Okay.
But she's not gonna any killer that has like a like a like that can like plot something against her.
She's not surviving Jigsaw.
She's not surviving Jigsaw. She's not surviving Ghostface.
She's not surviving.
Michael Myers is a stalker. That's not gonna happen. She can see. She can survive Jason, maybe, but she's gonna have to have enough bodies in front of her.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
If she was at camp with like everyone, like her entire high school, maybe.
So that's a big one. She's like just. She's got a minimum, like, 6 bodies, I think, before it's like, okay, well, now you're safe.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I think she has potential.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, apparently if she's, like, done super, super dirty and I still know what you did last summer, then...
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. We'll find out. Oh, my God, that's hilarious. but considering the differences from the source material, would you feel more... How do you feel about a more direct adaptation of the original?
It's funny, because I said this in the beginning, but, like, the original story sounds like a... I think it could be... I can tell where they took this movie and made some creative decisions.
Right? With the concept, for yes. sure. Yeah.
So, I like the... I don't think they would be able to do it again, because, like, this movie has been taken and, like, parodied and redone, and, like...
Mm-hmm.
Like, even just, like, the idea of, like, teenagers hitting someone and trying to cover it up, like, yeah. it's been done. Also, I think as, like, an American, in an American setting, as, like, people, like, hit and runs and drinking and driving was, like, it in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, people don't give a shit as much about, like, drinking and driving. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucked up, but, like, it's just, like, it's not, like, a hot topic.
It's not PSA level.
Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. like, back in the day, like, for example, I've mentioned before, I've been watching Law and Order SVU. I am on season like 18.
Like, god damn.
But like they had a whole episode about drinking and driving and like teenagers, like specifically teenage drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
And like drinking. And so I think that's why like this was so like impactful, because it was just like, ah yes, this is almost in its own way a folktale, and it's
yeah.
in its own way an urban legend.
It plays it in that same way.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Where it's like, oh, if you do this, this is what's going to happen.
There's a lesson to learn from it. Yeah.
There's a lesson. There's a morality to it, so mm-hmm. to speak. So I think that can kind of, like, retelling the story, like, is kind of, it's an old story now, which
yeah.
it sucks, but it's also.
It's part of the backlog.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's part of like a, like, you know, that how everyone has kind of come to the conclusion that there are no more original stories.
Mm-hmm.
This is like been beaten to dust at this point.
You know, interesting fact too. The director for the movie Urban Legends
mm-hmm.
auditioned for this one and he missed the deadline. But he
sent
a tape, and the producers were like, well, we're going to use you for another one.
And it was Urban Legends.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Urban Legends is a dumpster fire of hilarity.
That might be worth a cover also. That was garbage. 100%.
Truly garbage. 100%. Oh. That would be another fun, very high movie.
Oh, my God. Definitely. No, for sure. But actually, so considering this is actually one of the highest grossing slashers of all time, did you feel any influence of this on the genre at all?
I think, like I mentioned before, I think it helped with, like, the cementing of tropes.
Yes.
But otherwise, I think you're absolutely right when you say that, it is a, in, what was it? Like, it was a product of its time.
Oh,
there we go.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Now, like, I think the lessons you glean from these kind of movies were more inspired by things around it rather than the movie itself.
Totally, totally.
Yeah, because this is, yeah, even though this was written pre-Scream, it's like beta Scream.
Yeah, this is, it's very funny that this got written before Scream, and then Scream happened, and then they're like, oh, I guess we're gonna write mm-hmm. that, or put this out as quickly as possible, and then obviously that happened.
It does feel like a step leading into Scream, which is weird.
Like, yeah, well, that's why tell. I think it's funny that this came out after, because obviously, like, I think for some people this could be viewed as like a step back for him.
Mm-hmm.
So which is why I'm like, I almost wish that this had come out before, but obviously no one wanted to put this out.
No, yeah, and they weren't ready for it.
No, and then Scream happened, and then everyone wanted it immediately.
We're like, oh, where's the unrefined one? I'm like, oh, fine, fucking take it. Give me the money. I'm gonna write the faculty with this money, which was like another evolution right there. Ah.
Yeah. So I think imagine watching them in like sequential order, like watching this and then watching Scream and then watching The Faculty.
That would be weird. Like with your first exposure to these films?
Yeah.
Experiment on your brother.
I might have to. We watched Clue, and then we watched Knives Out.
Oh, okay, that's different. I haven't seen Knives Out yet. I know. I gotta watch it. I'll get to it. It's on which channel? HBO?
It's actually on Amazon Prime right now.
Oh, wait. I have your login.
Yeah,
I have your login.
Like, you have my login. I do. I'm good. Watch it.
I got this.
It's good. That's why I was saying, like, in terms of, like, linear, like, progressions, Clue to Knives Out, it's very fun to watch.
Interesting. Okay. All right, I'll keep that in mind. So, what did you do last summer that you want people to know about, nefarious or otherwise, Alex? What are you hiding?
What am I hiding? What did I do last summer?
I'm actually going to look at my photos to make sure I know what I did last summer.
Last summer, we went...
We did go to San Diego, didn't we?
We did. That's actually that's actually what I did last summer. Last summer, dear listeners, this is what I did with your co-host, dear Anthony Fuentes.
Yep.
We went to San Diego and I got fucking blastered.
We got turnt. We got turnt.
We went to many, many bars and I had so much fun and woke up on my couch in my mom's house just like, oh God, what have I done? But no, nefarious or otherwise, I'm trying to think of like anything other than stuff that we did. We mostly just hung out last summer.
I know. I'm looking at this. We went to Perch, which is a rooftop bar in Los Angeles in the middle of the city around all the big buildings.
Dude, like, do you know how pissed off? I mean, obviously there's a pandemic, so I'm not gonna be like, I'm mad that I can't do what I want to do. Like, obviously, it's not safe, so yeah. Obviously, it's fine. I'm still going to voice my frustrations because I'm a little bitch. But, like, I just miss, like, the summer, like, rooftop drink. Like, I miss going to bars with you.
Right? No, we live in SoCal, which is one of the most populous, most... If California was a country, we're a big part of the world economy.
Yeah.
That's how much opportunity and things are around us for things to do.
Well, and like, remember when we went to Beetle House?
Museum of Death.
Yeah. I mean, that was for your birthday last year, but... Yeah.
That was spring, but still.
So it was very much spring. But last year, I moved into my own place.
Mm-hmm.
Got my... Like, I finally moved out on my own. No roommate life, so...
I was applying for jobs, and I ended up getting this awesome one that I have now. And fucking... we also went to Davy Wayne's. Oh, you didn't go for that one, but like...
I went to Davy Wayne's.
That's... Then you... Right, you were with us then for that.
Mm-hmm.
Davy Wayne's having the classic old-fashioned, best old-fashioned in Los Angeles.
You went
to
Davy Wayne's a couple times, so I know I was there for at least one of them, but...
Yeah, summer, we're watching 70s bands and roaming across Hollywood.
Midsummer.
What's up? Midsummer experienced the biggest earthquake. Yep, that SoCal had experienced in ages.
Oh my God, during the most emotionally intense part of the entire fucking movie.
Oh.
What a nightmare.
Damn. Yeah, so last summer was fun, guys.
Last summer was good. And
we know what each other did last summer. It was great.
Yeah, we were heavily involved with each other's last summer.
Ugh. Well, I mean, we can't go out, so
this is our summer now.
So it still counts. It's just among history.
Lots of ups and downs this summer.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, last summer, though, history wasn't really happening. Like, it wasn't. It wasn't.
I mean, not in the scale that it is now.
Not in the scale, exactly.
Because, like, last summer, like, shit was going down. But, like, now it's just like, ah, yeah, shit is hitting the fan.
Hey, I like that. That's a good assessment right there.
Thank you.
Good points. So, kill of the film.
Johnny Galecki.
Me too. 100%. 100%.
Like, just seeing that man get a fish hook through his fucking neck.
And then just
neck
rock
and just,
down towards the ice. Just, yes. So that actually brings me to my next question right here. What would you rate I Know What You Did Last Summer out of 5 dead Johnny Galeckis in a trunk?
I will give it, because this conversation has just made me feel better about the movie.
Yeah.
I'll give it 3.
Oh, hey. That's close to I'm actually giving it a 3.75.
3.75?
0.75 for nostalgia.
The 0.75 is for nostalgia. Well, that makes sense because I don't have the nostalgia factor.
Yeah, no, so you just have the base movie, but I'm rocking it for... it was almost a 4, but I'm just like, I can't reasonably make it that high. There's no reason for it to be that high. Much as I love Jennifer Love Hewitt with all of my heart, I can't.
I understand, and I respect you giving it an honest...
Showing some restraint. Thank
giving
you.
It an honest response. Let's see. I think then...
That's it?
That's it?
That's it? You ready for next week?
Or
to come in later in this week? I don't know when fucking...
You know what? So, basically, whenever episodes come out for the rest of this month is when episodes
come out.
There's
two left.
There's two left.
There's two left. You guys will get them.
Holy shit, guys!
There's two left.
We didn't mention this at the top of the episode, but I'm going to tell you because... I'm supposed to tell you every episode. Sorry about that. But this is our season finale month. Holy shit.
I know.
We're going to take a month off because if nothing, I've deserved it. Anthony also deserves it. But if nothing.
We really need to.
We also really
need to. Yeah.
We need a fucking break, dude.
Giving you guys a full season every year is it's a lot of work. But we look fucking. Obviously, we have times like this right now, which are awesome. So, yeah.
No, we love doing the podcast. Like, literally, like, having something consistent to bring me through all the shit that's been happening, like, has just, like, it just brings my life.
I'm going to go into my meeting tomorrow. Like, I'm kicking the goddamn door down. It was fun.
But no, just so you guys know, next month, the month of August, we will not be releasing episodes. That doesn't mean we won't be active on social media and what have you, but we will not be releasing new episodes. Just so we can kind of prepare for the next season and prepare for, because then we'll be back in September, which is just like the beginning of spooky season. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited for that.
And then you guys are getting us in October, and our 100th episode is going to be on Halloween.
Yay!
Oh,
it's going to be great.
God damn.
We're still in debate on what that 100th episode is going to be. If you think you know better than we do, and you think you know what our 100th episode should be, you should hit us up on social media, which is, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod, and then you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast, which is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. So you can harass us there and tell us what you think our 100th episode should be.
Right. And as for our, 90th episode next coming up?
Next week?
Next week's number 90.
Yay! What a fitting.
Wait, no, it's 89.
Oh, way to go.
But the movie's from 1990.
The movie is from 1990. It's my biggest fear. I'm greatly looking forward to it. It's gonna be a treasure.
And you're writing that one. I can't wait.
I know. I'm very excited. It's a legacy. You guys, I hope you guys like it. We're going back to someone who we have covered long before on the podcast, and so it'll be a great return. So
and it'll be his movie after the ones we've already covered.
So it'll be a good time.
Yes. Sequel episode. Yes.
So thank you everyone for joining us. That was I Know What You Did Last Summer from 1997.
Yep.
And then if you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It does help tremendously and it means the absolute world to us. I was just talking to Anthony about, like, you know, when you're sad, we just go through the the reviews, and it just makes me smile.
All five stars, we appreciate it. Like, oh.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, it's my heart. It's awesome. So you guys are the absolute best. We love, I honestly, seeing comments and, you know, seeing you guys interact with us on, like, social media and stuff is just, like, the fucking coolest. Mm-hmm. I love it. You guys are awesome. So yeah, keep it up, and we'll get back to you next week with our very, very special 89th episode.
Yeah.
Until then, thank you for joining us, and if you want to follow Anthony on social media, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
All right.
So until then, don't stick your head out of sunroofs while drinking and cause a car crash that inevitably ends someone's life.
Yeah. And also, if you're thinking about actually doing the 5-star rating, all I have to say is, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Bye, guys. See ya.